Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Ayin Dalet Amud Bet, five lines from the bottom, Tanu Rabbanan. The braita that we're about to bring discusses a halacha that derives from a pasuk that says, Ubat Kohen ki tiel ish zar, that when a daughter of a Kohen marries a zar, marries someone who is not a Kohen, then she leaves the household of her father, and she's no longer able to partake in the truma and the kodeshim of her father's household, because now that she's married to someone who is not a Kohen, she no longer has the status of being a Bat Kohen, and therefore she can't partake in what otherwise are the privileges or the items that Kohanim can eat. The Gemara in Yevamot darshins from that pasuk, Michitiel Ish Zar, the Kevan Shiniv Allah Lipsola Pasla, that if she has Biah with someone who is Pasul for her, that also makes her Psula in her father's household. So not only where she marries someone who is not a Kohen does this happen, but also if she has bi'ah with someone who is inappropriate, that also ruins her status as being a part of her father's household. And the Braita over here is going to discuss what exactly is the pasul la, what is the psul that causes her to be considered a zara. Now as Tosafot points out over here, the Braita seems to source this out of Almanah the Kohen Gadol. And why does it need to source it out of Almanah the Kohen Gadol if we have the pasuk that Bat Kohen ki tiel ish zar, which teaches us this din? So Tosafot says that all that the Gemara here is doing is showing that the case of Almanah the Kohen Gadol is not a stira or not a problem for each of the different opinions which are laid out here that tells us which biapsula is problematic for the woman. On the other hand, there are other rishonim that suggest that the pasuk tells us that if she has a bi'ah psula, then she is eliminated or removed from her father's house, but we don't know what is considered to be a bi'ah psula. And therefore we use Almanah the Kohen Gadol as the paradigm for defining what is called a bi'ah psula. And that's why here the Braita discusses what exactly is the framework of the case of Almanah the Kohen Gadol that determines when we have a bi'ah psula, but we don't have a psula for this woman. So now the braita begins. Tanu Rabbanan, ben teisha shanim v'yom echad. If you have a man who is 9 years in one day, the reason for that threshold is because then his bi'ah is considered to be a bi'ah once you cross over the threshold of 9 years in one day. Ger amuni u'moavi, mitzri v'edomi, kuti v'natin, chalal u'mamzer, shebau al kohenet. In all of these instances, if one of these individuals has bi'ah with a woman, that is whether she is a kohenet, a bat kohen, who then will be precluded from partaking in the gifts of the kohanim within her father's household, or will restrict her now from marrying a kohen, with regards to the bi'ah or bat Yisrael, then this will restrict them in the future from marrying a kohen, because they will have a status of a zonah, because they have bi'ah with someone who is pasula. So all of these individuals who are problematic, ger amuni o moavi, who is not allowed to come into Kal Hashem, mitzvi ve'edomi, within the first three generations are not allowed to join Kal Hashem, kuti v'natin, who are considered to be problematic gerim, and a halal, who is a kohen that married someone who he was illicit and therefore produced a kohen halal, or a mamzer, who can't join the Kal Hashem. So all of these individuals, if they have bi'ah with these women, then they are posel these women from being able to marry a Kohen in the future because they are zonot, and for a bat Kohen, it removes her from her father's house. Rav Yossi Omer, kol shezaro pasul, posel. V'chol she'ein zaro pasul, eino posel. So Rav Yossi gives a slightly different definition than the Tanna Kamma. The Tanna Kamma himself laid out the individuals that caused the problem. Rabbi Yossi brings another layer of filtering to determine whether this is a bi'ah psula. And that is that if this marriage or this consorting between these two individuals will produce an offspring that is problematic, then that individual, when he has bi'ah with this woman, is also posel the woman. So being posel the woman is determined by the offspring that will be created from this relationship. The Gemara in a second will discuss what the nafkamina is between Rabbi Yossi and the Tanna Kamma. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer. Now Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel brings a different perspective on how to filter or understand what causes the psul here. Kol shatano se bito, atano se amanuto. If you can marry the daughter of this woman, meaning the product of this relationship, a daughter who is born to them, if you can marry that daughter, then you can marry the widow of this individual. Meaning that the woman is psula, if the female offspring of this relationship would also be psula. So if you can marry the daughter, then you can marry the widow. If you can't marry the daughter, you can't marry the widow, and that's the determining factor as to whether this woman is psula. So now the Gemara asks, Ma'ika ben Tanakama or ben Rabbi Yossi? What is the difference with the nafkamina between the definition given by the Tanakama, who lists out all these individuals who are surim, versus Rabbi Yossi, who says it's determined by whether the offspring from this relationship is problematic? Sam Rabbi Yochanan, Mitzri Shini Ika Benayu. A second generation Mitzri will be a nafkamina between them, which is the third generation Mitzri is allowed to enter into the Kal Hashem. So in the case of the Tanakama, a Mitzri Sheni is still restricted. And since the Mitzri Sheni is still restricted, if that Mitzri Sheni has Bia with the woman, he will be posel that woman. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yossi, where the test, or the litmus test to know whether this woman is now psula, has to do with her offspring. Well, the offspring of a Mitzri Sheni and someone else will be a Mitzri Shlishi, who is mutar level bikal. So the offspring is not restricted. Since the offspring is not restricted, what Rabbi Yossi says is that the Mitzri Sheni will also not be posel the woman. That woman will not consider posel when she has bi'ah with the Mitzri Sheni. As opposed to the Tanakamu, who says the Mitzri Sheni is asur, and therefore the bi'ah from the Mitzri Sheni with this woman will make her psula. And that's what's the difference with the nafkamina between them. This is what we discussed before, that they both learned it out of this paradigm of the Kohen Gadol marrying the Almanah, which is an illicit or problematic relationship. A Kohen Gadol cannot marry a widow. So therefore, this is a problematic relationship that results in the woman being now psula, and that's based on the pasuk that says by the Kohen Gadol the Almanah, Milo Yichalel, that he will not profane. And over there, the Gemara Darshan, since it doesn't say lo yachel, but rather lo yichalel, which is shnei chilulim b'mashma, that there are two chilulim that take place over here. One is the offspring that comes from the almanah, the Kohen Gadol, and the other chilul is the woman herself, is therefore profane, that she can no longer marry a Kohen, she becomes psula. So therefore, from almanah, the Kohen Gadol, we see that there is an impact on the woman herself, and the woman herself becomes a chalala, and that then restricts her from marrying Kohen going forward. Now, what the Gemara says is, well, if we look at that, the almanah, the Kohen Gadol, as being a paradigm of a situation in which the woman is then restricted in the future from marrying a Kohen, or she becomes psula, then we can use that as an example of what is the filter, or what is the litmus test to determine whether a woman is psula. The Tanaka Masavarti Kohen Gadol be'almanah. Just like by the Kohen Gadol be'amanah, Ma Kohen Gadol be'amanah shibi'ato be'aveira, that their relationship is problematic, uposelba. And because the relationship is problematic, the woman then becomes restricted. She gets a shame zona, which does no longer allows her to marry a Kohen. In all these instances, we're talking about the woman is psula, means that she's psula to marry the Kohen. She is psula in terms of her father's household, if she is a bat Kohen. But as far as marrying a regular Israel, it would not be problematic. So too, anytime you have an illicit relationship, posel, the woman herself would then become psula lekuhuna. Rabbi Yossi Savar, ki Kohen Gadol be'almanah. No, the paradigm is just like the Kohen Gadol be'almanah, but not just at the level of the individuals engaged in the relationship, but rather also the offspring. Ma Kohen Gadol be'almanah shizaro pasul. Just like by the Kohen Gadol to the Almanah, where the offspring is a Kohen Chalal, and therefore is Pasul, Uposel, and so too the woman herself, which we learned that from Lo Yichalel, also becomes a Kohenet Chalala, or if she's not a Bat Kohen, she becomes a Chalala, and she will not be allowed to marry a Kohen afterwards. Av Kosh Zaro Pasul, Posel. So too, any time where you have this relationship that results in an offspring that is problematic, then the woman herself who engaged in this relationship also will become a psula. Lafuke, that would exclude the case of a mitzvah sheni, shein zaro pasul. Because by the mitzvah sheni, his offspring is not pasul. The Amar Kra, the pasuk says, Bani mashi yavaldu ahem, doshli shi yavaldu ahem, mikal Hashem, that the third generation of children that are born to a ger mitzvah are allowed to join the Kal Hashem. So a mitzvah shlishi has absolutely no restriction from marrying into the Kal Hashem. And so the offspring of a mitzvah sheni, which produces a mitzvah shlishi, is not problematic. If that's the case, the mitzvah sheni also does not posel the woman that he has a relationship with, even though it's an illicit or problematic relationship. So that would be the nafkamina between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shimon Gomel Omer, Kosha ata nose bito, ata nose amanoto. Anybody who you can marry the daughter, then you can marry the widow. Koshi ata nose bito, I ata nose amanoto. If you can't marry the daughter of this woman, relationship, then you can't marry the woman herself as well. Ma'ika ben Rabbi Yossi, the Rabbi Shimon Gomliel. What's the nafkamina between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Gomliel? Rabbi Shimon Gomliel seems to be extending the test even beyond what Rabbi Yossi suggested. The Tanakama has no test. If it's a bia psula, then the woman ends up being a psula. On the other hand, for Rabbi Yossi, the test is the offspring produced from that bia. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gomliel seems to narrow it down, not as just the offspring, but it has to do with the female offspring. So what is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel adding that Rabbi Yossi did not say before? So Amar Ula, Ger Amuni Umoavi Ika Beinayu. The nafkamina between them is a case of an Amuni Umoavi that converted, which is the offspring of an Amuni Umoavi actually has a din that is bifurcated, which is that their male offspring remain problematic because an Amoni Moavi may not join Kal Hashem, period. That's even after they convert. That matter is no matter how many generations. On the other hand, we have the principle that Amoni velo Amonit, Moavi velo Moavit, that the female offspring are allowed to join Klal Yisrael. So in that instance, the daughters that are born to these Gerim will be Mutar levo Bakahal. So there is a bifurcation of the din, and that will produce the nafkamina between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Once again, the paradigm that they're using is the Kohen Gadol to the Almanah. The Rabbi Yossi Savar Ki Kohen Gadol Be'Almanah. Rabbi Yossi, like we saw before, says that the Kohen Gadol to the Almanah is this paradigm. Ma Kohen Gadol Be'Almanah Shizaro Pasul Upusel. Just like by the Kohen Gadol to the Almanah, that the offspring produced is problematic. So since the offspring is problematic, the woman herself is a psula. Av Kol Shizaro Pasul Pusel. So too, any case where the offspring is problematic, therefore the woman herself will be considered to be a psula. In our case over here, by the Amoni and Moavi, their offspring are problematic. And since their offspring are problematic, the wife of these individuals, or the woman that they have bi'ah with, will be considered to be psula. Kikoen gadol, mebishim gamliel, so mebishim says, kikoen gadol ba'amana, makoen gadol ba'amana shikol zaro pasul. In the case of the Kohen Gadol to Amanah, whether they have male offspring or female offspring, they will be a halal or a halala, meaning that both of them are problematic. Af kosh is a ro pasul. So too, only in cases where the offspring will be problematic in their entirety. Afilu nifke vot, even the females. Lafuki ger amuni umoavi, by the ger amuni umoavi, that's not true. Not all offspring are problematic in that case. It's only the male offspring that are problematic. The female offspring are not problematic. Because the females born to an Eger Amoni and Moavi would be mutar to join Klal Yisrael. Damamar, Amoni, velo Amonit, Moavi, velo Moavit. Because we have the drasha that it's only the male Gerim from Amon and Moav that are problematic. It's not the females that are problematic. So in that case, for Rabbi Yossi, you have offspring that are problematic. The offspring in being problematic also makes it that the woman who had bi'ah with this individual is psula. On the other hand, for Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the test is not simply if the offspring are problematic. It means all offspring must be problematic. If there is any bifurcation in the din with the offspring, then the woman will not be psula. And by the case of Amoni Moavi, you have that because the male offspring are problematic, but the female offspring are not problematic. And that will be the nafkamina between the position of Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Now, Amar Rav Chisda, Hakol Modim, Ba'amanat Isa, Shipsula de Kuhuna. Everybody agrees with a widow of an Isa that they are problematic l'kuhuna. Now, as we've seen before, Isa means that it's a mixture or there are many ingredients put in there, but it's a terminology means that we have a safek isur involved over here. The way that Rashi here in the Gemara explains that safek is he says it's amanat safek chalau, that she was married to a individual who was a safek chalau. So now she is captured by the safek of her husband because her husband was a chalau, his biyah will make her psula. So if he was a chalau vadai, this woman would now be a psula. But the problem is that her husband is only a safek chalau. So since he's a safek chalau, she is only a safek psula. Now, despite the fact that she's a safek psula, Rav Chisda says that everyone here agrees that she is psula likihuna. Because man mekel bahane tanae, who is the most lenient of the three tanaim that we just brought from the Braita? Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel. He's the most mekel v'kamar. Kosha atano sebito, atano se amanuto. If you can marry the daughter of this relationship, then you can marry the widow of this relationship. If you cannot marry the daughter or the product of this relationship, then you can't marry the woman, meaning that the woman herself will be psula. What case does that come to exclude? Meaning that what does Rabbi Shimon Gamliel think is problematic? Amanat Isa, shepsula l'kuhuna, comes to exclude this case of an amanat Isa, which will be psula l'kuhuna, because in this instance, the safek that creates the problem for the woman also creates the same problem for the daughter or the son that is born from this relationship. So the relationship is a relationship of safek. That safek also produces a child who is a safek, but that safek you can't overcome. Since the child is a safek, the kohen is precluded from marrying that daughter because of the fact that she is a safek product of a kohen chalal. Since he can't marry the daughter mi safek, he also cannot marry the mother or the widow of that relationship mi safek. And therefore, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is coming to tell you that's the case, or in that instance, there is a problem in marrying the woman. Even Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the most makel of the three tanaim, would agree that that is psula d'kuna, l'fuke mehanei tanae, and it comes to exclude or go against the position of these Tanaim, because we have Tanaim who say that the Amanat Isa is not problematic. That's not. He'id Rabbi Yeshua v'Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira Amanat Isa shekshera l'kuhuna. They said in the Mishnayot and Ediyot that this Amanat Isa is permitted to marry a Kohen, is not problematic. My time, what is the reason? Havi sveik sveika. Because it's a double-leveled sveik. Sveik sveika l'kula. And when you have a sveik sveika, it goes l'kula. We go to the lenient side. Now, for Rashi, this is very difficult, because Rashi really only explained to us one safek over here. The safek is whether the Kohen who married this woman was a halal or not a halal. So his safek impacts on the woman, his safek impacts on the child that is born. But there's simply only one safek here as to whether this is a Kohen halal or this a kasher Kohen. Yet, or despite that fact, Rashi says, when the safek is passed to a new party, meaning that the Kohen Chalal, now who engaged with this woman in Biyah, so that woman's status is a derivative of the status of the Kohen, but by the mere fact that she comes mikocho, davila safek sveka, Rashi says that the fact that she is a derivative of another safek, that makes it into a safek sveka. So that's very difficult, because most places in Shas, when we deal with the safek sveka, you're really dealing with a decision tree. A decision tree that says that you have two choices, A or B. And then, even if it is B, B has an additional two choices of C and D. And that's a sfeik sveika. There's a sfeik whether you're in bucket A or bucket B. Even if you're in bucket B, there are another two possibilities of either being in C or D. And that's usually where the sfeik sveika exists. For Rashi over here, there's really only one sfeik. The sfeik is just shifting from one part to the next. And Rashi is calling that a sfeik sveika. Therefore, there are many Rishonim who disagree with Rashi, and Rashi himself, as is noted here by the Bach in the Gemara in Ketubot, brings from Rav Yosef Tov Vilaim a different explanation as to what the Sveik Sveika is over here. If you look in the Tosafot Ria Zakein, he brings from the Rambam an explanation of the Sveik Sveika, and he says, V'ram Perish B'Kedusha Verk Yutet Shnitarev Mishpachot Sveik Chalal. So there was a mishpacha, there's a family which has a safek halal that got mixed up in it. O safek natin, o safek mamzer. Any safek pasul that got mixed up in this family. V'himshila mishpacha zu. This family is called ki isa shit arva chelkeha. So that the different component parts are mixed together. Kishnilos hakemach. When you need the flour, when you put the water and all the other salt and items into it, you mix them all together. Upresh sefek sveka. What's the sfek sveka? Shema zu amanat oto sefek. Because any woman from this family, she could be the widow of this individual. And then, even if she is the widow of this individual, there's a possibility that she is the widow of this individual. There's a possibility that she's not the widow of this individual. Even if she is the widow of this individual, then maybe he's not a problem because there's a safek whether he's a kohen halal. So over here you have a double level safek. One safek is whether this individual himself is a kohen halal or not a kohen halal. Secondarily, since this individual got mixed up in this family, we have no idea who that party is. And therefore, when you're looking at any woman from this family, she could be the widow of this individual. She may not be the widow of this individual. So you have two levels of safek, one of which is this the widow of this individual? And even if she is the widow of this individual, maybe this individual is not problematic because it's a safek as to whether this individual was problematic. And that's how you generate this sfek sveka. That's the way that the Rambam explains the sfek sveka. Rashi in Tubot, as well as many of the Rishonim here, give different variations of what I'm about to explain here as being the sfek sveka, but basically it's a case where you have sfek gerushin, the case where the husband gave this woman a divorce, and we're not sure if the divorce was valid or not. What happens afterwards, that's where all the Rishonim differ. Again, it's all really of the same ilk, which is then that woman either married another party, or she took back her original husband. And the second individual that she marries, or her husband itself, when she gets remarried to him after the divorce, is a Kohen. So in that case, we have a baby that is born. She married this individual within 3 months of the passing of her husband, or within 3 months of the divorce from her husband. And then they have a baby. So now, the sfek sveka is, we don't know if the get was a good get or not. We also don't know if the baby belongs to the first husband or the second husband, or in the case where she remarries her original husband from before they had the divorce or after they had the divorce. So there's two levels of safek here. One safek is, was she divorced at all or not? And number two is, even if she was divorced, does the baby belong to this second husband or to the remarriage of these individuals, which would make it pasul? Or maybe the baby is from before that or from the first husband, and therefore it is not pasul. So that's the sfek sveka that is explained by Rashi and Ketubot and many other of the Rishonim here. Now, why a sfek sveka goes to Kula? We discussed this in the Gemara in the beginning of Ketubot, that there are two approaches as to why a sfek sveka is the Kula. One approach, and that seemingly is the approach of the Rambam, is that sfek, in general, is a din min haTorah that says, if I have a sfek mi deoraita, I go to Chumrah. But why do I go to Chumrah? It's a safek. It's something that's in doubt, uncertain. So what we say is that mi d'rabbanan. The rabbi said that whenever we have a safek or a doubt, uncertainty in a doraita, we go to Chumrah. So that gives you the first layer. The second safek now makes it that now I have a safek in a din d'rabbanan. And we have a principle that a safek d'rabbanan is the kula. So the first level of safek generates a safek d'oraita. There we go to Chumrah, because the rabbis told us, when you have uncertainty with a Torah law, you should go to Chumrah. But then when you add in an additional layer of safek, it now becomes a safek d'rabbanan, because the only reason you were going to Chumrah in the first place was because the rabbis told you to do that. So now when you layer on a second layer of safek, it becomes a safek d'rabbanan, and we have a principle by rabbinic laws, or rabbinic institutions, when you have doubt, we go to Kula. And so that's why the sfek sveka ends up bringing us to a din l'kula. That's one way to explain it. The other way to explain it, as we noted in the Gemara in the beginning of Tubot, is to say by the case of sfek sveka, there is no leidat hasafek, as it's called, which is that the doubt never gets off the ground, which is that a sfek sveka reduces the probabilities to a point where it's no longer a case of being in doubt. I mean that we need a certain amount of relevance or a certain threshold of probability in order for something to be called a safek. So if you have one safek, now that safek can be 90-10, it can be 50-50, but there is a level of probability that something is a safek, and based on that level of probability, we have to make a decision as to whether this is a real safek or not a safek. But the case of safek sveka, once you have this dual level or this double decision type of safek, you reduce the probabilities significantly enough to bring it below the threshold by which it would be considered a doubt anymore. That you've made it into so small a probability that now there is no leidata safek. We're not in doubt anymore. It's as if there is no longer a safek that exists. So those are the two ways to approach this safek sveka as the kula. In this case, with the exception of Rashi, is cases where there is a dual level safek here. And therefore, these tanaim would pass in the kula. Whereas, the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and according to Rabbi Chista, of course, Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama, is that that sveik sveika is not sufficient grounds to say that the woman is not psula. And they argue on these other tanaim that say that the sveik sveika goes le kula. But Rashi, who says that the sveik sveika here, it's not your classic sense of sveik sveika, that may make it more understandable as to why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and Rabbi Yossi and the Tanakama of the Braita would argue on this principle. They might hold of the principle in general of sveik sveika lekula, but that's only in a case where there's a dual level safek, where there's a double decision about what the safek is. But our safek here, which is just a safek that's being passed from one party to the next, since it's a derivative of another party, they're calling it a sveik sveika, but it's not your traditional sveik sveika. And therefore, that might be why Rabbi Shimon Gamliel argues in this case that it should not be the kula because it's not that classic sveik sveika. Now the Gemara goes back to what we discussed before, the position of vadan bivadan mutar. That when it comes to psulim, if they are, according to Rabbi Elazar, vadai bivadai, if we know for certain that they both have the same soul, then they are mutar lavo zeh bazeh. But in the case of safek, then we do not allow them to get married. So Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amarav, halocha ki Rabbi, again, the girsa here is Eliezer, but as we saw in the Mishnah, that the Masorat HaShas shows us that we would favor the girsa being Rabbi Elazar. So the halocha is like Rabbi Elazar of our Mishnah. Kamrita kameh de Shmuel, when Rabbi Yehuda said this over in front of Shmuel, Amar li, Hillel shoneh. Hillel teaches us, Asara yuchasin alumi Babel. There were 10 types or categories of individuals that came out from Babel. Ukulam mutarim navo zebaze. And they are all allowed to marry each other. The way Rashi says, kulam mutarim navo zebaze, is that all these isurim, all these different types of isurim are allowed to marry each other. Tosafot does not like that explanation, but says, v'nir l'ri, fresh tochol echad v'chad mutar b'mino. Mutarim navo zebaze means that anyone who has this psul, they can marry someone else with that same psul. So, what Shmuel, in essence, is doing is quoting our Mishnah. The question of why he says Hillel Shoneh, that Hillel was the one who taught this Mishnah, Rashi seems to indicate that he's quoting a Braita in which Hillel said something similar to our Mishnah. Others just suggest that Shmuel's indicating that our Mishnah is a Mishnah Kadum. It's an early Mishnah, and that's represented by Hillel, who is one of the early Nisi'im, that he begins the Shoshelet that leads to Rabbi, who is the Mesadera Mishnah. By saying it's from Hillel, says that it's a very early Mishnah. But in either case, what you see here is that they are allowed to marry each other. Vatamart, halacha ki Rabbi Elazar. And you're telling me that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar. So Rabbi Yehuda, we've noted before, who learned both by Rav and by Shmuel. So he first learned by Rav. And then many times afterwards, when he's learning with Shmuel, he tells Shmuel what Rav said. And Shmuel sometimes agrees, sometimes disagrees over here. He disagrees with what Rav said. He says, how can you say the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar when it goes against our Mishnah, the first Mishnah in the Perek, which is also either learnt, taught or an early Mishnah of Hillel, or is a Braita in which we find Hillel. So he says, how can it be that you're paskening like Rabbi Elazar when the first Mishnah says they are mutarim to lavol bazeh, to marry each other and without any restrictions? So it's seemingly the halacha should not be like Rabbi Elazar. Rami de Rabba de Rav, Rami de Shmuel de Shmuel. Now this position of Rav and this position of Shmuel, we have a stira to something else that they said. De Itmar, Arusashi Ibra. We have a woman who is halachically engaged, but now she is pregnant. Rav Amar Havlad Mamzer. Rav says, for sure, the offspring of this woman is a mamzer, because this woman obviously had an extramarital affair, and that's why she's pregnant now, and the child that she's bearing is a mamzer. She's halachically engaged. She's not permitted to have bi'ah with anyone. If she has bi'ah with anyone, the offspring is a mamzer. Shmuel Amar Avlad Shtuki. Shmuel says it's a safek. We don't know who the father of this child is, and since we don't know who the father of the child is, it's a safek mamzer. Rav Amar Avlad Mamzer Umutar B'Mamzeret. Rav says that despite the fact that we don't know for certainty that this child is a mamzer, we deem it to be a mamzer, and he can marry a mamzeret, which basically means that a safek mamzer can marry a mamzeret, or, in other words, like our first Mishnah in the Perek, or against that position of Rabbi Elazar, who says only a vadai bevadai. Shmuel Amar, Avlad Shtuki, Vasur b'mamzeret. Shmuel says it's a safek mamzer here, and therefore he cannot marry a mamzeret, which is akin to Rabbi Elazar's position, which Shmuel just said, but we do not subscribe to. Gemara says, Epoch, flip their positions. Rav Amar Havlad Shtuki, Shmuel Amar Havlad Mamzer. So therefore, you have now, by flipping their positions, aligned themselves with their previous views. Rav says it's a Shtuki, that this is a Safek Mamzer, therefore you cannot marry a Mamzeret, along the lines of saying the Locha is like Rabbi Elazar, that only by Vadai, Bevadai, are they allowed to get married. Shmuel Amar Havlad Mamzer. On the other hand, Shmuel says that the Vlad is a Vadai Mamzer, even though it's a Safek, he's considered like a Vadai Mamzer, and therefore they can marry a Mamzeret, just like what our Mishnah seems to indicate, that any soul that is found, Safek or Vadai, they can marry each other. It says, Tarti Lamali. Once you've done that, why do we need Rav and Shmuel to tell us the same din twice? So Tzricha, Deit Mar Baha, had you only told me the case of our Mishnah, or the case where Rabbi Elazar says that only Vadai be Vadai, Baha Kama Rav Mishum Derov Ksheri Metzla. The reason behind that is because the majority of people in the world are Ksherim. So when this woman has or gets pregnant, we can assume that the father is a kasher, because the majority of the world are kasherim. And that's why Rav says that we don't allow this offspring, who's a safek mamzer, to marry a mamzeret. Avahotam, by the case of the arusa, the rov psulim metzla, that the majority of individuals for her are psulim. There's only one person in the world that's not a problem for her, and that's her arus. Everybody else is considered to be a psulam. So ema modi lishmo. Maybe in that case he would agree to Shmuel that we will deem the baby to be as if it is a Vadai Mamzer. So the Kamash Malan is that Rav says even in the case of Rob Sulim, we still say that the blood is considered to be a Safek Mamzer and not a Vadai Mamzer. Beit Mar Bahach, had we only had the case of Arusa, Bahach Amarav, Mishum Di'ika the Mitla Barus. So in that case, maybe Rav says that the baby is a Safek Mamzer because you could assign the fatherhood to the halakhically engaged individual here. He could be the father of this baby, and therefore there is suspicion or there is a high likelihood that he might be the father of this child, and in that case, the child would be kasher, and that's why we call it a safek mamzer of Abaha. But the case of our Mishnah, or the case of Rabbi Elazar, where it's random, we have no idea who the individual was, Ema Modi, the Shmuel, maybe again he would agree that in all likelihood, the product here is a mamzer, even though the rov ha'olam is ksherim. Nevertheless, we have also a principle that the rov of individuals that are found by these illicit relations are people who are problematic, meaning that these shady characters that get involved in these situations many times are because they have other problems. And for that reason, maybe over here, the baby should be deemed to be a vadei mamzer. Tzricha, that's why we need both cases. Again, this is different than the general tzricha of the Gemara, where it would say, well, for Rav, we need it because it goes this way, and for Shmuel, we need it because it goes the other way. Here, it describes both of the positions, the Gabe Rav's position, and that might be for the fact that, generally, we paskin k'rav b'isure. So here, the Gemara might be trying to clarify Rav's position, because, in general, the halacha is like Rav, and Tosafot discusses that as well, that here, Rav, we paskin like him, as well as the fact that Rava seems to support this view of Rav, and halacha is like Rava. So because of that, Tosafot thinks that the halacha over here should be like Rav, and maybe that's why the Gemara is very focused on Rav's position. V'bay Dema, lo'olam lo tepuch. So now another option is to say that we're not going to flip their positions with the case of Arusa. My mamzer, the kama Rav. When Rav says it's a mamzer over here, love mutar be mamzeret. He's not coming to teach you that it's a mamzer, therefore that she can marry a mamzeret, which would go against his view that the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar, el dasur be bat Yisrael. he's deemed to be a mamzer, which restricts him from marrying a bat Yisrael. But that doesn't permit him to marry a mamzeret. Or in essence, he becomes a safek, and he's not allowed to marry a bat Yisrael, and he's not allowed to marry a mamzeret, which is the halacha that Rabbi Elazar taught us. Ushmol amar havlad shtuki. What does it mean that he's a shtuki? Dasur bat Yisrael. The shtuki comes to teach you that you can't marry a bat Yisrael. Because not that a shtuki means that you cannot marry a mamzeret, but rather just telling you that you can't marry a bat Yisrael. It says, yehachi hanu derav. In the end, you're saying that both the word mamzer and shtuki result in the same thing, which is you're not allowed to marry a bat Yisrael. Elamai shtuki, shemeshat kino to midin kihuna. Or rather, shtuki is that we block him from the din of kihuna, which is if the arus, in this case, is a kohen, we don't assume that the child has rights as a kohen, even though the father could have been the arus, and he is a kohen. Or it says, pshita. That should be an obvious outcome or a product of this circumstance, because you're saying that this child cannot marry a bat Yisrael, which means that we're worried about the yichus or the fatherhood of this child, and we won't let them marry into Kal Yisrael. Then certainly kuna, which is a much higher standing or yichus, of course he's not going to be deemed to be a kohen. We're not going to give him rights as a kohen. Elamai shtuki shimshatkin oto minichsei aviv. That we don't allow him to inherit his father's property, meaning the arus again. We don't say that this child has a right to inherit the arus's property. Again, it says, pshita, biadina navu amanu. We don't have any idea who his father is. So how can he come here and make a claim that, oh, I'm the inheritor of the arus because he's my father? We have no idea who his father is. If we knew who his father is, we'd know what his status was. Lo tzricha de tafas. It was a case where he jumped the gun. The arus passed away, and this child goes in and grabs the part of the estate or all of the estate property and says, I'm the inheritor. So we would have thought maybe we should just leave it there because it is a safek as to whether the arus was his father or not. The Kamash Malan is that he's a shtuki, that it's a full-fledged safek, and we remove the property from him because he doesn't have a right to take it. And therefore, we are calling him a shtuki for that reason. But in this case, you could leave the memra that we had by Rusashi Ibra, Rav and Shmuel's position, you could leave them in place. We would just explain their position slightly differently, which is when Rav says the blood is a mamzer, he's not saying that he's a mamzer vadai and can marry a mamzeret, even though there's a safek here. He's just saying that this individual is deemed a mamzer, that they can't marry a bat Yisrael, but they also can't marry a mamzeret. And Shmuel will be saying to us that it's a shtuki to tell us that even if this child jumps the gun and grabs the property of the arus, who could have been his father, we still remove it from him because there is a serious safek over here. Vibayatema. Now here's a third way to deal with that statement of Rav and Shmuel with regard to Arusashi Ibra. My shtuki, beduki. What does it mean, shtuki? It means beduki shibudki metimo. We check out what the mother says. Vomeret, the kasher nivalti nemenet. If she says that the person that I consorted with was a kasher, she's believed, and the child is considered to be a kasher. Kiman. Who does that follow? Kirabin Gamliel, as we spoke about before. That the shita of Rabbi Gamliel in the Gemara and Ketubot is the woman herself is believed in these situations. It says, "V'hamar Shmuel chadazimna." Why is Shmuel telling us this information here when he already told this halacha somewhere else? That's not. Haytam mi'uberet. We have the Mishnah in Ketubot that says if a woman is pregnant, "V'amrula mativu shel ubarze," and they ask her what is the source of this child, and she says, "Me'ish ploni v'koinu." She says it's from so-and-so, and he is a kohen. Kohen doesn't have to be literally, but he is someone who is kasher. Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, ne'emenet. Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer say that she is believed in that case. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, ain't a ne'emenet. Rabbi Yeshua says we don't believe her. Lo mipia anu chayin. We don't rely on this woman. And we saw the Mishnayot throughout the first and second parak there in Ketubot as to why or the reasoning behind these different positions. So Shmuel already told us the halacha is like Rav and Gamliel that we do believe the woman. So why is this case of Arusash Ibra, where Shmuel says that it's called a shtuki because we check into what the woman says and we believe her? He already told us that halacha. It says, Tzricha, we need this, and this is similar to what we did with the shita of Abba Shaul in the Mishnah, which is Dimi Ahatam. If it was from the case of the Mishnah in Ketubot, Havamino hatam rov ksherim etzla. Because the case there is the rov ha'olam are ksherim. And therefore she has nemanut together with that majority that most of the people are ksherim. Vahocha the rov psulim etzla. But in the case here, by the arusash ibra, where the majority of the world are psulim for her, emalo. Maybe she should not be believed in that case. Tricha, and that's why Shmuel came to teach the din here, that she has believability not only when the majority supports her, but she is believed even in the case where the majority does not support her. And so therefore, that's Shmuel's additional din, or additional chidush here, in telling us that by the case of Arusashi Ibra, that she is believed, is that the fact that even though we're faced with Rob Sulim, that the woman is still believed to tell us that she was nivelet l'kasher. Okay, now the Gemara brings down a braita, a tosefta from Kiddushin, that will preoccupy us for the remainder of today's daf, which is Tanya. V'chein Rabbi Elazar Omer, kuti lo yisa kutit. A kuti may not marry a kutit. So over here, the assumption is that we're talking about the kutim, which were the nations that were brought by the Assyrians to live in Eretz Yisrael, to basically replace the Jews that lived in the area of the Shomron. And so those individuals, those kutim or Shomronim that come there, the Navi tells us that they convert to Judaism because of the fact that there were lions running around and killing amongst them. And so, as was believed in that day, whenever you came to a new location, you had to worship the god of that location. And by worshiping the god of the location, that would protect you or afford you the ability to live peaceably in that location. So the question arises throughout the Tanaim and then into the time of the Amoraim as to what is the status of these Kutim that converted. Were they Geri Emet? Did they really convert as Geri Tzedek, true converts, and therefore they are full-fledged Jews? Or were they Geri Arayot, which means that the fear of the lions is what caused them to convert, and they really had ulterior motives, which was that they were afraid of the lions, and that's why they converted. Now, even though the Gemara in Yevamot tells us that if you convert for ulterior motives, you're not allowed to do that. But if they did it, then the conversion goes through, so technically they are converted, despite that fact. So over here, you have to say one of two things. Either, so the Ramban suggests over here that Rabbi Elazar does not subscribe to that conclusion of the Gemara in Yevamot. And that's why he believes that if they were Geri Arayot, it would be problematic. On the other hand, you could explain that even if you hold, like the Gemara in Yevamot, that's only in a case where, after the fact, the person becomes a practicing Jew. So even though maybe the beginnings of their conversion were not properly motivated, nevertheless, after the fact, we see that this individual really wanted to convert, and then they take up Judaism in a full-fledged manner. On the other hand, here, by the case of the Kutim, we know that they were later on found to be worshipping Avodah Zarah, and therefore their conversion was not considered to be a full-fledged conversion. So now the Gemara wants to know, my taima, what's the reason that this would be the case? Now the nature of the question is, because no matter what you say the status of the kuti is, then the kutit that he's marrying should have that same status. Meaning that if you think they're not real converts, and they're not Jewish, then the kuti is not Jewish, and neither is the kutit, and so they should be able to marry each other. If you think they are Jewish, and then therefore there's a problem of mamzer or mamzerut here, then both the kuti and the kutit should be a mamzer and a mamzeret, and they should be able to marry each other. So even if you want to say that a kuti or kutit are problematic, the fact that they're marrying each other should not be problematic. And so that's what the Gemara wants to understand, my taima. What's the reasoning behind Rabbi Elazar's position? I'm Rav Yosef, asua kiger la'achar asarat dorot. They make it like a convert after 10 generations. So in the case of a convert, as we've seen before, kahal gerim lo yikre kahal, that the kahal of gerim is not called a kahal, and therefore they're allowed to marry a mamzer or a mamzeret, because they're not restricted of kahal Hashem, the problem that exists for a mamzer or mamzeret. So if you have these converts that generation after generation marry, if they are gerim, then they can continue to marry mamzer or mamzeret. The problem is that after a certain amount of time, it becomes unclear, or it's no longer remembered, that these individuals were gerim. And since that's not remembered, it looks like a regular full-fledged Yisrael here is getting married to a mamzer. So therefore, what we say is, Titania, ger ad asarat dorot mutar b'mamzeret, a convert up to 10 generations, then he's allowed to marry a mamzeret. Mikan ve'elech, asur b'mamzeret. From there onward, he's asur b'mamzeret. Not that there's anything inherent in 10 generations, it's just as Rashi says over here, that l'fishin yashnu b'Yisrael. They've already become aged within Yisrael. Nirim k'Yisrael, and they look like full-fledged Yisraelim. Basur b'psulot d'kahal, shema yomru Yisrael nasa psula. And they're asur to marry a psula, like a mamzeret, even though it's mutar min adin, we don't want it because of the marat ayin that is involved here. The way it looks, the appearances of how it looks, that this individual is marrying a mamzeret, nobody's going to remember that far back that this individual was a ger, and therefore they're not going to understand why he's doing it, and they'll think that a regular Yisrael could marry a mamzeret. So in order to prevent that, we say that after a certain threshold of time where it's no longer remembered that this family or this individual was a ger, that we do not allow them to marry the mamzeret. And some say that it's not a fixed length in time of 10 generations, but rather it's once the name of the other nation or the origins of these individuals fall away from the family, at that point in time, they are like full-fledged Yisraelim. Even though technically they have this right, nevertheless, they can't exercise that right anymore because they become so integrated, because people forget what the origins of this family or this individual was. So over here too, the Kuti and the Kutit, they are so far removed, the origins of their families, so over here, they made them, or they're going to deem them like a regular Yisrael, and not going to allow the Kutit to marry the Kutit, to the Kutit to marry the Kutit. So Amalei Abai, Abai says to Rav Yosef, Midomi, how can you compare the cases? Hotam ger yashan, umamzeret chadasha. You're talking about a ger who's been around for many, many years, I mean, there are many generations of this family, and you're talking about a mamzeret who is a first-generation mamzeret, or someone who is a mamzeret right now. Amrei bar Yisrael hu deka nosiv mamzeret. And the mistake people are going to think is that the individual marrying this mamzeret is a full-fledged Yisrael, and he's marrying a mamzeret. How can he do that? Hocha, in the case of the Kuti and the Kutit, iti b'iti ka dodininu. They both have the same standing or the same status. So why should it matter? So if they forget about where the origins of these families are, they're going to forget about the Kuti and the Kutit. If they remember the origins of these families, then they'll remember it about the Kuti and the Kutit. So whatever the standing of the two parties is, it's of a similar nature, and therefore it should not present a problem. As opposed to the case of the ger to the mamzeret, where you have one of the parties who is aged, quote-unquote, within Klal Yisrael, and people forget the origins of this individual, versus the mamzeret, who is somebody that's right in front of us now, who's a psula. So there, you're worried about people's perception of them getting married. But in the case of the kuti and the kutit, where they're both of the same ilk, why should that be a problem? Ella, Kiata Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael, we've spoken about this many times, Rav Dimi is traveling back and forth between Eretz Yisrael and Bavel. Many times he's bringing Memrod from Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. So when Rav Dimi came, Amar, Rabbi Elazar, Sever like Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Elazar here holds like Rabbi Ishmael. Rabbi Ishmael, Sever like Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Ishmael holds like Rabbi Akiva. And through this compilation of different opinions, that it will explain why Rabbi Elazar believes over here that a kuti can't marry a kutit, which is Rabbi Elazar sever like Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Elazar holds like Rabbi Shmuel damar kutim gere arayotim. The first thing we establish is that the conversion here was not necessarily a proper conversion; it was a conversion under duress, and therefore we don't believe that the conversion went through, and these people or these individuals are really considered to be non-Jewish. Rabbi Shmuel sever like Rabbi Akiva, and Rabbi Shmuel also subscribes to this position of Rabbi Akiva, Damar Oved Kochavim Ve'Eved Abal Bat Yisrael Havlad Mamzer, that when you have a relationship between an Oved Kochavim and an Eved that engages with the Bat Yisrael, the product of that marriage is a Mamzer. This is Rabbi Akiva the Shitato, who says whenever you have an Yisr Lav involved, then the product is a Mamzer. It's not just when you have a Chiyuv Karet or a Chiyuv Mitad Beitin, the offspring is a Mamzer, even in the case of a Chiyuv Lav. Now, what's interesting over here, Tosafot deals with it over here, as well as in the Gemara in Yevamot, Tandaf Tat Zayin Amud Bet, with regards to Rabbi Yochanan Shita, which is similar to this of Rabbi Akiva, which is an Eved and Ovei Kochavim, Abal Bat Yisrael, that the offspring is a Mamzer. What Tosafot there and here is searching for is, what is the restriction? What is the problem? Now, with regards to an Eved, we can find or solve that problem because of the Pasuk that says, Lo Yeh Kadesh, Ibn Israel. Over there, we saw that the Targum Unklos is that a Eved Kani may not marry a Bat Israel, or a Israel may not marry a Shivcha Knanit, and that comes out of the Pasuk of Kadesh and Kadesha, based on the Targum Unklos. So over there, you find a Lav. So that Lav would produce a Mamzer Lashita to Rabbi Akiva, or at least for Rabbi Yochanan, that would be again a source for the fact that you could possibly have a problematic relationship over here. But for the case of Oved Kochavim, where is there a lav that produces the problem? So Tosfot speculates, maybe it's Lo Titchatein Bam, but we already learned just before in the Masechta, Lo Titchatein Bam doesn't tell you that it's restricted, it just tells you that Kedushin are not Tofsin. It teaches you that you cannot generate Kedushin with these individuals, not that there is a lav or a restriction involved. If that's the case, what is the source for the fact here that they are Mamzerim? So what Tosafot in the end says is something that we discussed earlier also, is that Tosafot connects the two items and says, if Kedushin are in Tofsin, then by definition the offspring is going to be a Mamzer, that those two are two sides of the same coin. And therefore over here, if Kedushin are in Tofsin, then it must be that the offspring from this relationship is also a Mamzer. Whereas the Tosafot in Yevamot talks about the possibility that here you only have a Mamzer mita Rabbanan or not Mamzer mita Oraita. So now what the issue is that we have two opinions now that we're trying to aggregate and say that there's a problem over here. The first of which is that Rabbi Shmuel believes that the Kutim were not properly converted, means that they remain as non-Jews. Rashi over here says, where does Rabbi Shmuel say that? We're not really sure. Maybe it comes from the remainder of the Gemara, which says that there is Shlosh Machlokot B'davar. We have three-way Machloket later on in the Gemara. One of the opinions there is Rabbi Shmuel. And within that opinion, it seems that Rabbi Shmuel believes that with regards to the Kutim, that they were not considered to be proper converts. In addition, we're then layering on Rabbi Akiva, who says that if they're not Jewish, and then they have a relationship with a Jewish woman, then the product of that marriage is a mamzer. So now, what, as Rashi says, happened here is, Deish Lamar, Tuchol Echad Mehem Hu Bam Yisraelit, Haniseit Ovei Kochavim. What you say is, this Kuti, or this Kutit, is a product of an Ovei Kochavim that married a Jewish woman, Barihu Mamzer, and therefore they are Mamzerim. So there's a risk with each one of them that one of these two parties was a product of a marriage between a Jewish woman and a non-Jewish man. And in that case, the child is Jewish, but they are a Mamzer. On the other hand, the other party is a product of a Kuti and a Kutit, both non-Jews. And so now you have one of the parties being a Mamzer, but that is Jewish, and the other party being a non-Jew. So despite the fact that a relationship between a non-Jew and a Jew produces a mamzer, that does not permit a mamzer to marry a non-Jew. So you have a possibility here that one of the parties is a Jewish mamzer, or a Jewish mamzeret, and the other party is completely non-Jewish, and therefore they can't get married because of this safek, and therefore we don't allow the kuti to marry the kutit, because each one of them has a safek of possibly being Jewish and a mamzer, versus the other party that might be non-Jewish completely. And so that's why Rabbi Elazar believes that they should not get married, because we can never establish the status of these individuals. Now obviously this makes an assumption that there were Jewish women that married the Kutiim, and there were periods of time where the Kutiim were considered more separate or segregated from the Jewish people, and other times where the Kutiim were much more integrated in Klal Yisrael. And so there were times or periods when it was likely or possible that a Jewish woman would have married a Kutit and produced this issue. Now the Gemara challenges this and says, "Umisavar la Rabbi Shmuel ka Rabbi Akiva. Is your aggregation of these opinions really true? Can Rabbi Shmuel really hold like Rabbi Akiva?" Bama Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan says the name Rabbi Shmuel. Minayin Ovei Kochavim ve'evet shebau al kohenet. Well, how do we know that Ovei Kochavim, or an Eved that has bi'ah with a kohenet, v'al bi'ah, v'al bat Yisrael shepaslua, that they make her psul? Shinemar, Bat Kohen Kiti Almana Ugrusha Vezera Einla. In a case where a Bat Kohen gets divorced or is widowed and she has no offspring, then she returns to her father's house to eat Truma under the auspices of her father. But that is Kitiyah, when she has Habaya and when she has Almana Ugrusha. Mi Sheshlo Amanut Vigirushin. That's only true if the party she married generates her to be a widow or a divorcee. That's not true by an Eved or an Ovei Kochavim who cannot establish Kiddushin with her, cannot have Ayhaya with her, also can't have Gerushin with her, because they come hand in hand. If you think the Rabbi Shmuel holds like Rabbi Akiva, if the offspring is a mamzer, then you're questioning that the woman herself is a psula. Of course the woman is a psula. If the offspring of this parties are mamzer, the definition of a mamzer is that there was some sort of illicit relationship that took place. So if the offspring is a mamzer, certainly the woman is a psula. So then why is Rabbi Shmuel searching for a source for the fact that this woman who consorted with an Eved and Ovid Kuchavim, she's now psula to marry a Kohen, or psula to return to her father's household, if the offspring of that relationship is a mamzer, certainly she is problematic. But the fact that Rabbi Shmuel is looking for a different pasuk, or a drasha of the pasuk to teach us that, shows us that he definitely doesn't hold like Rabbi Akiva. Even though, as Tosafot points out, there is a shita that believes that an Oved Kuchavim or Eved Abal Bat Yisrael, the Vlad is mamzer, and still doesn't hold like Rabbi Akiva. Nevertheless, the language that Rabbi Shmuel uses over here is language that clearly says that he's not subscribing to that position, because Lashon to Kamar Hacha Shein Mamzer L'Misur Erva Mashma Dafka Mehani, that only those produce a mamzer and not an Eved and Oved Kuchavim. So if he doesn't subscribe to Rabbi Akiva, he's also not subscribing to this other Tana that says that an Eved and Oved Kuchavim can produce a mamzer even if you don't hold like Shita to Rabbi Akiva. Ella, so this is the way to explain it. I mean that, yes, it's accumulation of opinions, but it's not that Rabbi Shmuel holds like Rabbi Akiva, but Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar suffered like Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Elazar holds like Rabbi Shmuel, Damar Kutim Girei Arayot, that the Kutim were not full-fledged or proper converts. The suffered like Rabbi Akiva, Damar Oved Kuchavim Vevet Abal Bat Yisrael Vlad Mamzer. He also subscribes to Rabbi Akiva's opinion. So it's not a Rabbi Shmuel holds like Rabbi Akiva, but rather Rabbi Elazar holds like Rabbi Shmuel, and he also holds like Rabbi Akiva. He holds like Rabbi Shmuel that they were not proper converts. He holds like Rabbi Akiva that such a relationship between Eved and Oved Kuchavim and Bat Yisrael produces a mamzer. It says, Umi Sabala, Rabbi Elazar, can Rabbi Akiva? So forget about Rabbi Shmuel holding like Rabbi Akiva. Can Rabbi Elazar really hold like Rabbi Akiva? Bama Rabbi Elazar. Afa pli shenechluku beit Shemai beit Hillel b'tzarot, modim she'ein mamzer. That even though Beit Shemai and Beit Hillel argue about what the status of a co-wife to an erva is in the case of Yibum, they agree that the marriage does not produce a mamzer. Ella, mishimish isuro isur erva. Exception is for the case where there's an erva, banush karet, and there is a punishment of karet involved. So we know that Rabbi Kiva's opinion is that any lav, any restricted marriage will produce a mamzer. And over here, Rabbi Elazar is saying that the production of a mamzer only comes from a case where there's a rayot that involve a punishment of karet, which is the same as the opinion of Shimon HaTeimani, not the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Now what is being said here is the machloket in the Gemara in Yevamot with regards to co-wives of an erva. The simplest scenario that we'll give is the case where an individual married his niece and then passes away. He passes away without having children. That niece now falls to her father, who's the brother of her husband, to perform Yibum. Obviously, in that case, there's no Yibum because the father can't marry the daughter, and we know that Yibum doesn't apply, but Makom Arayot. But what happens if not only was he married to his niece, but he had another wife who had no relationship to his brother? Then, in the case where he passes away, Beit Hillel believes that when you pass away, the erva, the niece, then protects her father or blocks her father from performing Yibum. Just like she blocks her father performing Yibum with her, she also protects her co-wife, and her co-wife goes without having to have any Yibum or Chalitza. They are both completely freed in the situation. On the other hand, Beit Shammai believes that the erva, the niece, who's the daughter of the brother now who's going to perform Yibum, is freed without anything because she's an erva. On the other hand, the co-wife, you do perform Yibum with. Now, according to Beit Hillel, if you perform Yibum with that woman, that co-wife, then you have an erva, and the product of that marriage is a mamzer because it's performing Yibum overriding the Isser of Eshet Ach, but it's makom she'ein mitzvah. You're violating the Isser of Eshet Ach in a case where there's no mitzvah to do it. In that case, you would produce a mamzer. But in the reverse scenario, which is Beit Shammai looking at Beit Hillel, if you release the woman without anything, according to Beit Hillel, which is the case, then for Beit Shammai, that woman is now in violation of Lo Tiyah Eshet Hameit Chutza LeIsh Zar, that this woman can't go free to marry a third party until she has Chalitza. So in marrying another person, according to Beit Hillel, which is permitted, Beit Shammai sees that woman as violating a lav. And what Rabbi Elazar says, that for Beit Shammai, looking at this, the marriage is problematic. There's an Isur lav involved with it. But since the Kedushin or Tovsin product or the offspring of that marriage is not considered to be a mamzer. Well, if they're not a mamzer, then what you see is that Rabbi Elazar doesn't hold like Rabbi Akiva. Because Rabbi Akiva says when there is a lav, there is a mamzer. So if Rabbi Elazar says there's no mamzer, when Beit Shammai looks at the Shita of Beit Hillel, That means that even though the woman or the co-wife here who is freed without any chalitza according to Beit Hillel, then Beit Shammai looking at that says, wait a minute, she was supposed to perform Yibum or chalitza and she did neither and she goes to get married someone, she's in violation of a lav. Well, Rabbi Elazar says, even that violation of a lav still doesn't produce a mamzer because a mamzer only comes from chiyuvei karet, does not come from chiyuvei lavin. So therefore, the explanation here can't be that Rabbi Elazar holds like Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, because Rabbi Elazar clearly does not hold like Rabbi Akiva. Hello, ki ata Ravin, Amar Rabbi Chiya Bava, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So Ravin is another Amora that brings Memrot from Eretz Yisrael. Before we saw Rav Dimi bringing an explanation for this position of Rabbi Elazar, why a Kuti cannot marry a Kutit. And now we have Ravin bringing it, and here it's in the name of Rabbi Yochanan. Amilah Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Zabda, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Amilah Amar Rabbi Yahu Beidi, Amar Rabbi Yishu Ben Levi. So there is a discrepancy as to where this comes from. Shalosh Machlokot Badavar. There are three different opinions with regards to the status of the Kutim. Rabbi Ishmael Savar, Kutim Gerei Arayotain. As we saw before, Rabbi Shmuel's opinion is, and this is what Rashi quoted as possibly the source for Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, because we don't find it in the Mishnah or Brayta anywhere else, which is that these Kutim who converted, they converted under duress, and therefore they are not real converts. They remain as non-Jews because they only converted to protect themselves from the lions. And the Kohanim that got mixed up with them were problematic Kohanim. Whether they were problematic because they were Kohanim that were Mamzerim, Chalalim, or Kohanim Sulim is because of their behavior that they were Kohanim that ended up becoming Kohanim Avodah Zarah, not to Hashem. Because the Pasuk in Malachim says with regards to the Galut in the time of Hoshea ben Elah, when they gave over Kohanim to the Kutim, it says, Vayasu lehem miktsotam Kohanei Bamot. So from amongst them, they made Kohanei Bamot for them. V'amar Rabba Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, min ha-kotsim shiba'am. Either from the word kotz, a thorn, from those that were problematic within the am, or min ha-kotsim ba'am, from the word mukse, which means to segregate or to designate separately, which means that they were individuals who were problematic in terms of their yichus. So now the problem, umshimachi paslinu, and that's why the kutim are problematic. So the kutim themselves inherently are not problematic because they never converted and they remained as non-Jews. And therefore, if a kuti converted, it wouldn't be an issue. Problem is that they had these kohanim psulim who were Jews that got mixed up with them. So then these kohanim psulim had families, and whether they intermarried or not, that's not clear, but amongst the Kutim are not only non-Jews, but they're also Jewish families, but those Jewish families are Psulim. And so there's a risk now when you have a Kuti or a Kutit coming before you. We don't know if they are Gerim because they're non-Jewish, they're Kuti or Kutit, or because they come from one of these problematic Israelite families, and that's why we said you shouldn't marry a Kuti, should not marry a Kutit. Rabbi Akiva Savar, Kutim Gerei Emet Em. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva believes that the Kutim were Gerei Tzedek, they were righteous converts. Now, whether that means that they converted originally for the right reasons, despite the fact that the Navi tells us that they only converted because of the fear of the lions, but once they converted, they already did it with a full heart, or whether that means that, like we explained before, after the fact, once they converted, they started to pick up the mitzvot and they did that, or whether that means that, even though they may not have done it originally, full-heartedly, but later on, they maybe either converted again, or they accepted upon themselves to become full-fledged converts. And for that reason, the Kutim are Geri Emetim, the Kohanim, Shinit Me'ubahen Kohanim Ksherim Hayu. And the Kohanim that got mixed up with them were Kosher Kohanim, totally fine Kohanim, not with any psul, not whether it was a psul Yichus, not whether it was a psul because they serviced Avodah Zarah, Shinemar, Vayesudahem, Miksotam Kohanei Bamot. Amar Rabba Barchan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Minha Bichirim Shiba'am, meaning from the best of the nation. We have this also in Parshat Baloch Tcha, when the Torah tells us that the fire consumed the people, Miktzei Ha'am, from the edge of the people. So over there we have the same machloket. Does Ktzei, the edge of the people, mean the best from the Ktzinim, from the officers? Or does Ktzei mean from those that were weak, or those that were the worst of society? And so the same machloket here, Miksotan, or what, even if you define it as Muksa, to be designated or segregated, you can be segregated because you're better, or you can be segregated because you are worse. And so Rabbi Akiva sees the word Miksotan as being something that is positive in Bichirim Shinam. Bela mipnei ma asrum. So then what is the problem with the kutim? Mipnei shayu miyabmim et arusot upotrim et anisuot. The problem is that they were very tied to Torah shebichtav, and not as much tied to Torah shebe'alpeh. So they, when it came to arusot, they would perform yibum, or the mitzvah of yibum, when it comes to an arusa. But when it comes to a nisua, a woman who was in a fully consummated marriage, they would not perform yibum, but they also would not perform chalitza to release the woman. And their drasha is based on my darshe, lo tia eshetamei tachutza liishzar, that the eshetamei, the wife of the one who has passed away, should not, or is not permitted to be liishzar to a foreigner. Hach diat vachutza, he lo tia liishzar. The one who sits on the outside, she is not allowed to marry an outside party. I mean that she has to perform yibum. Who's the one who's on the outside? That is an arusa, because she has yet to be on the inside. She has yet to be fully consummated marriage with her husband. The woman who doesn't sit on the outside, meaning now she has a fully consummated marriage, and she's living, quote-unquote, on the inside with her husband, then, she can marry anyone she wants when her husband passes away. So they limited the institution of yibum to arusot, and did not apply it to nisuot. So, as far as nisuot were concerned, they didn't perform yibum, so that's fine, but they also did not perform chalitza. Now, in general, that would not be so significant. It would be an iser lav, which is the lav that she cannot lo tia ishtameh techutzu liishzar, so it would be a violation of a lav, but a violation of a lav has kedushin that are topsin. Kedushin that topsin produce a child that is kasher. But, remember, this is Rabbi Akiva, this is Rabbi Kiva l'shita do. Damar yesh mamzer mechayv ilavin. Rabbi Kiva l'shita do, it says that a chiyuv lav produces a mamzer. And therefore for him, you now have mixed up amongst these kutim, mamzerim. So now you have a problem, which is you have kutim or kutiot that are Jewish, full-fledged Jews, who are Israelim. On the other hand, mixed up in there, you have these mamzerim that are a product of this issue with regards to yibum. And so now you have mamzerim mixed up in them, and you don't know who is a Israelite versus who is a mamzer and a mamzeret. And that's why a kuti should not marry a kutit, because they're basically all safek mamzerim. And some veish vishem bikinim v'dukkei mitzvot. The problem is that they were full-fledged converts, but they were not so careful, or they did not have proper instruction with regards to the mitzvot. Again, here, they were following the Torah shebichtav, the Torah shebaal peh, they were less concerned with, or they did not necessarily accept the drashot, or they didn't have instruction from the chachamim about that. Because of that, it generated problems. The ein bikiyim, the Gemara will say in 1 second, refers to bikiyut in kitin and kiddushin, in the areas of marriage. And obviously, if you don't have all the laws with regards to marriage, you're going to have situations that produce mamzerim. So man yeshomrim, who's the author of this position of the yeshomrim? I'm Rabbi Dibavin, Rabbi Eliezer he. It must be Rabbi Eliezer, Titania. We have a braita, matzat kuti muteret. The matzah that is made by a kuti is muteret. V'adam yotzei ba yedei chavato b'pesach. And you're allowed to use it for your matzah at the Seder night, v'yotzei the mitzvah of matzah. So now there are two different issues that the braita is addressing. The one is whether it's chametz or not chametz. So as far as the matzah of the kuti, you can trust that it's not chametz. That's true of a non-Jew's matzah as well, which is that as long as it's not chametz, you can eat it, you can consume it. That's not a problem. There's a secondary issue, which Rashi discusses over here, which is the matzat mitzvah b'inan shimor l'shem mitzvah. That when it comes to the matzat mitzvah, the matzah that you use in the night of the Seder, to be yotzei the mitzvah of matzah, that has to be made, or has to be shimor l'shem mitzvah, has to be guarded for the mitzvah. That's what's matzah shmura. Over here, Rashi gives the definition of matzah shmura to mean that it has to be done l'shem mitzvah. Rashi and Psachim and Daf Lamed Chet Amud Bet discusses the other alternative, that the shimor, or matzat shmura, means that it was guarded against chametz from a much earlier time period. Tosafot over there thinks that maybe both are true, that the matzat shmura requires both a guarding against chametz from an earlier period of time, as well as the fact that it has to be guarded l'shem mitzvat matzo. And so what you're saying here in this breita is that the kuti is not only trusted that the matzah that he makes is not chametz, but we also believe that he invested it with the proper intent, so that it's done matzah l'shem mitzvah, and you could use it for the night of the Seder. Well, that seemingly means that the kutim are keeping the mitzvot. Rabbi Eliezer oser l'fi shem b'kiyim b'dikukei mitzvot. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, they're not so careful, they don't know all the nuances of the mitzvot, especially when it comes to drashot, like on the word shimur. So there, they won't know those details, and you can't utilize their matz for matzat mitzvah. It may not be chametz, but you can't use it for the matzat mitzvah. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, kol mitzvah she'chziku ba kutim, harbei medaktakim ba yoter miYisrael. Shimon Gamliel says, any mitzvah the kutim kept, they do it at the top level, which means that they are even better than a regular Jew who keeps the mitzvah. They're so medaktik on the ones that they keep. That's if they keep it. So if they keep the mitzvah, they are medaktik. If they don't keep the mitzvah, they're not medaktik. Now the truth is, within Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, it's not clear, does that mean that every mitzvah do raita, that's in Torah Shvachtav, they keep, and therefore we can assume that they keep it up to its details, or it's only mitzvot that we know that they keep, that we make this assumption that they do it to the utmost level. So that's a discussion within the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Tosfot here deals with the other issues, which is kol achol pakuti kilo chel chazir, that there is some sort of restriction on pat kuti. So then, how do you reconcile that with this heter to use the matzot of the kuti? So Tosfot differentiates between the kuti who makes his matzah in his own house, which has a din of matzat kuti, and that is problematic, whereas the matzah that he makes in a Jew's house, that matzah is okay if the kuti does it under the auspices of the Jew. In addition, Tosfot points out that there is a problem with the kutim in general, which is that they don't subscribe to the Rabbanan's explanation of lifnei iver lo titen michshol, which is you may not put a stumbling block before a blind person. They learn that literally. That's what's written in Torah Shebichtav. They don't take the figurative limo that Chazal do, which is you're not allowed to cause other people to do aveirot, and therefore they have no compunction about allowing other people to violate mitzvot as long as they themselves don't do it. So Tosfot adds another detail here is that it's only if the kuti himself eats the matzah can you also eat from the matzah, because then you're certain that he's doing it right. He doesn't really care about anybody else, he cares about himself. But if he's utilizing for himself, then it's clear that he had the right intent with the matzah, and therefore you can also utilize the matzah. Bela hachamai ein bikiim. So what does it mean that in our case here, that they were not experts? If Rabbi Eliezer says by the matzot, they're not experts, we know what that means. They don't know the din of shimur matzah. They don't know what it means to do it. L'shem matzat mitzvah. But over here, what's the thing that they didn't know? V'shem b'kiyim v'torat kiddushin v'gerushin. They didn't know properly how to deal with kiddushin and gerushin. And therefore, you're going to end up with problems of mamzerut. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avuah, mamzer me'achuto, u'mamzer me'eshet ach nitarvu behen. That we know that amongst the Kudim, there was a mix-up of a mamzer that derived from a sister, an illicit relationship with a sister, and there was also a mamzer that got mixed up from Eshet Ach, a case of possibly Yibum or lack of Yibum, but the wife of a brother, they got mixed up. Mar says, my kamashpalan. So what's this teaching us? Esh mamzer michaive kreitot. That there is a mamzer for chaive kreitot, meaning that a sister, the illicit relationship with the sister is a chiyuv kareit, and it's called a mamzer. So nitnei chado. So then once you've already established that there's a problematic mamzer that's floating around amongst the kutim, why do you have to tell me two examples of it? Just tell me the example of achoto, and then we would know that first of all, there's mamzerim me chiyuv kareit. Number two is we know that amongst the kutim, there's a problem of mamzerut. Where it says, maisa shayo kachaya. They happen to be two instances or two incidents like this. And that's why there were problems of mamzerut amongst the kutim. So it's not that he's teaching you anything with the additional isur of eshet ach or mamzer that derived from eshet ach, but he still told us about it because that was just factual. Rav Amar, eved v'shivcha nitarvu behem. That an eved knani and a shivcha knanit got mixed up in them. Ishsura mishumai. So what was the problem here? If an eved knani gets mixed up amongst them, why is that an issue? Because if he marries a bat Yisrael, and this is going according to the opinion that the Kutim were Gere and Met, that they were full-fledged Jews. If they marry one of those girls or women marries an Eved or even Ovid Kochavim, the child that is born is a Jewish child and is not a Mamzer. So the Eved is clearly not the issue. The issue is the Shifcha Kananit that got mixed up amongst them, because then the child that is born to that Shifcha Kananit is an Eved Kanani or a Shifcha Kananit. And that's what caused the problem, that this Shifcha Kananit was amongst those that were the kutim. So where it says, nechado. So then just write the case of shivcha, the case of Eved is not relevant. Again, maisa shaya kachaya. But that was the way that the factual cases happened. It happened to be that was both an Eved knani and a shivcha knanit that got mixed up amongst them. Only the shivcha knanit is really what causes the problem for them. But because both happened, they tell you that that's what happened. That was what transpired. From here, they're giving you the reasons behind why a kuti shouldn't marry a kutit. Because there is this safek or this problem that exists for the kutim. So according to Rabbi Akiva, the problem exists within the world of Yibum. Rav Akiva the Shitato, who says that a woman who requires chalitza and is released without that is in violation of a lav, which produces a mamzer. That means that there were mamzerim mixed up within the kutim. So therefore, you can't know whether you're a full-bred kuti that doesn't have this problem of mamzer, or whether your family has a problem of mamzerut. And therefore, a kuti should not marry kutit because of that issue. And obviously, marrying a Yisrael would be even more problematic. Whereas for the Yeshomrim, the problem was that the mamzerim were being created by not being bekiyim in gitin and kedushin. So once again, there's a problem of mamzerut over here. And then we had the explanations of the Amoraim of Amar Rav Nachman and Rava, who told us what exactly were the scenarios that generated these problems of mamzerut, whether it was because an Eved and Shivcha got mixed up, which means that there is an Eved Kani or Shivcha Knanit that is now mixed up amongst the Kutim, or whether there were these illicit relationships that produced mamzerim. So it was known that there were mamzerim mixed up here, but it wasn't clear which family the mamzer belonged to. Or according to Rabbi Eliezer, the problem is that you have these Jews who were psulim that got mixed up amongst the kutim. And because of that, you're never certain when you have a kuti or kutit that's coming, whether that's a problematic Jew or a full-fledged nachri that is trying to convert. And therefore, every kuti that's facing a kutit is faced with the possibility that they're marrying a mamzer or a mamzeret, and therefore they shouldn't get married. And obviously, again, for Israel or Israelite, it would be even more problematic. Okay, we're going to stop here by the Mishnah, and I involve them at Aleph.